When it comes to comedy and comedians, I will always be the outsider looking in. I love sitting down with them and listening to their experiences. I find a kinship with comedians, being in a band myself, where a lot of the preparatory work congeals inside one's mind or alone in one's room, where its results will inevitably generate weeks and months out on the road presenting the finished work. It has been a reoccurring topic on this podcast when comedians are brought on to discuss their protracted nature when it comes to releasing material. This I see as the main difference between comedians and musicians. While some musicians are too prolific for their own good, pumping out records and side projects to the point where you want to tell them to slow down or stop outright, comedians are more contemplative and precious with their craft. After all, a musician can sit in a room for an hour and write three songs, but it could take weeks for a comedian to write a quality joke. Even then, song appreciation is so relative to whomsoever hears it that an 8-minute dirge of noise could be music to one person's ear and, well, simply noise to another. Jokes, on the other hand, leave little room for interpretation with an underlying expectation that they be a series of bullseyes and bold strikes. The standards are definitely higher in comedy. One needs to take a casual look at what passes for music these days to know that we as musicians adhere to no standards whatsoever. So I'm always very excited when I hear about my favorite comedians releasing anything, televised specials, DVDs, and my preferred comedic platform, the comedy album. I love collecting comedy records. If there's one patch in my record collection that I fawn over the most venerated, it's my collection of comedy records. For the amount of working comedians out there, few put out anything. Meanwhile, in music, bands have management, record deals, and discographies before they've even played a show. One of my favorite comedians out there just happens to be Canadian. Just happens to have been a previous guest on this podcast, too. Episode number 35, to be exact, Mr. Jason Rouse. And on that last episode, we talked about him possibly putting out a record. I, for one, would love to hear a Jason Rouse comedy record. Well, it's on its way, and I'd like to think that our discussion from last year had some sort of role in precipitating its release. Maybe. Probably not. After all, Rouse is an accomplished comedian, several awards, a road record that spans the globe, and now an album. It's called Rotten, and currently you can get it through his website, jasonrouse.com. During the Christmas holidays, Rouse dropped by and talked shop with Nick and I about everything and nothing at all, as usual. It's always fun to be around someone who has something that's about to be released. You get excited for them. So we caught up with Rouse on the eve of his album's release. I'm just happy there's a comedy record that exists that met Rouse's high standards for quality. As with every episode, thanks go out to Skull Candy Headphones, and Blue Mic Microphones. Supreme thanks to you for listening and for all your wonderful comments on iTunes and SoundCloud. Thank you again. Okay, here we go. Jason Rouse is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast. And for this episode, we're going to start it with a song that was written for the podcast. Check it out, because it starts now. Yeah. Nick Vinegar is Danko's co-host. It's the greatest podcast from coast to coast, coast to coast. And I say the Danko Jones podcast makes me feel alright. The Danko Jones podcast makes me feel alright. Number one in the world, one in the world, it makes me feel alright. The Danko Jones podcast is the best, makes me feel alright.
It is Christmas, isn't it?
Well, the last time you were here was a year ago.
Was it a year ago?
It was a year ago. It was like almost
Well, if not to the day, to the week.
Oh, really?
You were here a year ago.
Okay. I was planning to leave because I started my Canadian tour a couple months ago. I went from Los Angeles to St. John's, Newfoundland, which was great.
October?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, Newfoundland, it'll be fun. But it turned out the East Coast shows were the best. Halifax, Moncton, mm-hmm. and St. John's, Newfoundland.
They're so stoked down there. St. John's?
Showed up.
I feel like
Saint, drunk.
St. John's is one of my favorite Canadian cities. It's just that it's so far. You know, like it's just a little bit hard to get to. Once you get there, it's like really pretty. I imagine that's what some English towns would look like.
Most definitely.
And like the people are just like, they're happy that you're there, you know?
And it's weird how they're mocked by the rest of the country is for their kind of quirkiness, but they're so nice.
And their accent, isn't it the accent that...
Don't you play the East Coast at all?
No. We no? want to. No, we want to.
Really?
Yeah, we've been to Halifax a few times.
But yeah.
Those domestic flights
We've never
are
played
hard.
Newfoundland, and we've only played what? New Brunswick once. We've never played Prince Edward Island.
I think if you played Newfoundland, it would probably be awesome.
Charlottetown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Charlottetown's great, Prince Edward Island.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. I'm talking about 9 years ago, last time I was there. Okay. But beautiful. Like, it's Anne of Green Gables. You know, you're going, you're driving through a postcard.
And you played there in Anne of Green Gables?
No, in Charlottetown. Yeah.
Was it just you and a bunch of Japanese sort of tourists, you know, like photographed? Because that's like the thing about PEI is Japanese enthusiasts of Anne of Green Gables, like, are a big part of the tourist industry there.
And same in Norway. It's weird.
Oh, that's so weird.
They get, like, these herds of, like, people from all over Asia that come and see, like, really white people. It's right. Like they're going to see unicorns.
Right, yeah.
Like, wow, they can make them that white.
But then all the people in Norway are also looking at them going, wow, this...
Yeah.
Wow. So this
Thanks
is
for bringing
these are
the
Japanese.
Money in. Like you can put it in the pile with next to the oil we got over here.
Totally. Norway is probably one of the best countries in the world, period.
Yeah.
I mean, on every level. Arts.
Yeah.
Hair color.
View.
Yeah. They're more well-rounded.
But it is an amazing country. Norway is...
I've only been to Oslo.
A land of awesomeness.
It seems difficult to get further than Oslo.
Bergen is awesome.
We were just there last month. Maybe just 3 weeks ago, we were in Bergen. And Drammen, which is kind of like a suburb, I would say, of Oslo.
Okay.
We played there. And then we played outside of Oslo as well. Yeah, it was a great little run.
And it's a great place to spend $13 on a pint of beer.
Right, yeah, exactly. Much better than Italy, where you can actually strangely do the same thing.
Is it really expensive?
I remember in Milan once just like going to a bar and being like, did we just spend, you know, like
70 bucks.
To 10 euros on
you
a
You can't do that, though.
Beer?
Yeah.
You can't.
I made that
mistake. You're not going to have a good time.
Yeah. And you've learned as a traveler like yourself, you got to spread it out.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to distance as much, but it's hard to be, as a stage performer, and then go into the audience and just try and have a normal conversation. Everybody wants to take you and show them how crazy their neighborhood is, and have some shots and do this and that, and then
or
they don't understand that this is every town, and you just get burned out on it. But you've never been really. I don't know what it was like earlier in your career. I've never seen you.
It lasted for a couple of tours, and that was it.
Yeah. And you were just—you weren't even partying. You were probably just like staying up and checking out what was going on.
Yeah, right? Partying would be staying up and talking to someone about records, and then we'd go to the record store the next day.
So no wonder you got burned out.
Wow.
Actually, there was one time we were in Bergen, and you were in Bergen.
That's right.
And Corey was like going, "Rouse is here," and I'm like, "Well, that's great, man. Yeah, we're at the bar." Well. You guys have fun.
Yeah.
Tell Rouse I said hi.
I would only drink like two or three beers. I mean, we're talking $13 a beer. Like, literally, that's not even exaggerating. Then let's say you want a midnight snack or something when you're out drinking. That's $15 too.
Stumble into the Burger King in Oslo. That's a $25 happy meal.
Or 7-Eleven.
There's nothing happy about that.
No.
It's a sad meal.
That's a decadent meal. That's all. But 7-Eleven was the most mind-blowing for me. in
I ate a lot of hot dogs.
I was like, first of all, so classy. You walk in, it's like there's like this.
There's a Sears like catalog
VIP
model.
Lounge. You know?
She's like a model working the cashier.
And you get these amazing hot dogs. I got like this incredible sausage wrapped in bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like, but it was like $19 probably. And
I know the 7-Eleven you're talking about.
Really?
In Oslo? It's the one that says 7. No.
Yeah, you know, it's got that sign.
I go to the one, you know, the garage in Bergen. The
yeah, bar we were just there. Yeah, we were
there's
just
a,
there.
There's a 7-Eleven on the corner.
Yeah, that's I know where I get that my one. Hot dogs. That, I know that one you're talking about, too.
That's a great little
yeah, we
city.
Just played there.
Made from the finest
last
lips
month.
And assholes.
From 96 to 2004, I was doing comedy in Canada, and then moved to England in 2004. I had my ancestral visa via my grandfather being born in England.
Nice.
That expired, and then I had my green card came into effect, so I had to take a residency. So I went to New York. I didn't dig New York. It was too much for me, and not enough... going from London, England, which is like the best comedy thing circuit in the world.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. It's kind of deflated a little bit now over the last 4 or 5 years. I kind of got out at the tail end when I moved to the US, but I loved it. Like you just flip, you look at Time Out magazine, and there's 100 venues in the city. And you get a chance. You can take the public transit and do 2, 3, 4 gigs, and then go into New York, where there was this kind of.
We're New York.
I was living in.
I mean like we're New York. So fuck you.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like
and that's fine.
Know, fall in.
But there was like a rash of like I don't know this whole kind of like you're a nerd, Nick. But you're a real nerd.
I'm a true nerd.
You're real, but you must actual do it.
Weirdo.
You get a lot of scabs.
I wear. I have genre. Scabs.
I mean, like comedians are mimicking something that you've been your whole life. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like he's Nick. Is
all,
real deal.
First of all, I mean I'm like sexy nerd.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, you know, Jeff Goldblum if he was in a motorcycle accident.
Yeah, like Jeff Goldblum if, like, he had maybe, like, genetics, worse genetics, you know? Like,
and like, by your posture, scoliosis.
Yeah, scoliosis, like, never invested in those orthotics, you know? Maybe, like, like the village. If the village idiot had sex with like one of Jeff Goldblum's ancestors,
you're like Michael Richards without the N bombs and the bank account.
I love how you're participating in your.
Yeah. You're supposed to give. You know, it's all about. You have to say yes and
because
you know,
he's true to who he is. He's very aware and self conscious, and that is. But you get like these other people that are kind of mimicking this kind of nerdiest type things, and it's fake. And it fucks me off.
I mean, the whole thing is really weird, Jason. Like, it's first of all, I think that.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know. Yeah. I mean, no, I know what you're talking about.
You've become a fat.
My fat already passed. I'm actually in like a second life of trying to do another thing. You know what I mean? Like, of just trying to be as like
a second wind in your career.
I honestly am only about. Just like trying to connect at this point with an audience. That's like the only goal of every show.
Yeah.
You know, like it used to be thinking that like detachment and jokes was enough, but then it was like, it just was like I felt what I thought was my fad time, basically, like when people would have liked me. And I played to exactly what should have been, I thought would have been my audience, which was, this was a dumb thing to think, like 21 to 24 year old. Rock fan.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. At, I think the first time we'd met briefly was at the where we used to kick the ceiling.
Jerky Treats, probably.
Yeah, what was the bar called?
Rancho Relaxo.
Rancho Relaxo, yeah. And I think you were in there one time, and there was this kind of culty kind of thing that you had like something going.
Yeah, something was going for a few years, and then I feel like all of these American comics who had this sort of combination of being like. Really, really personable, a lot of them, and then sort of nerdy, but sort of not.
They check boxes to, like, conform it.
Yeah, and like suddenly it's like just like doing a bunch of jokes while you're not making eye contact and like about having a hairy, you know, butt or something.
Yeah.
Dick, really, was what I would say. Like, weren't gonna... I just was like, oh, this is like really not, you know, this is not gonna... I'm gonna be like, you know, not able to work if I just keep doing this.
Yeah.
Which is sad, you know, because I didn't... I liked doing it that way. But I also saw people like Anthony Jeselnik kind of like having just all of the ingredients in place.
But he's not a nerd. Like, his whole image isn't a nerd.
No. But that's what I'm sort of saying. Is like, he was like this confident guy who would like smile after saying all this crazy shit, and I was like, I don't know, you know, like, it kind of made me realize how much, yes, but how contrived something has to be if you want to sell it as, and even him, I would argue, has had, like, kind of, like, a lot of flack, you know, even though he's been successful for sure, I think that there's still a lot of people who are, you know, he said that, like, he writes something that is, like, I really want people to be able to say, like, crazy shit as comedians. I really want that to just be allowed. But, you know, if he posted that thing about the Boston Marathon, I had to delete it, you know, like...
Attell is the master.
Yeah, well, Dave Attell is just
He is the master.
I think that so whole generation of people, I think that there's a lot to be said for people who came up
a is little it maybe bit
before
because,
the nerd rise,
because
you know?
Jeselnik is a kind of a good-looking guy, and Attell is not, you know, he's not. So... It's
apples and
him.
Oranges, though.
Yeah, Jeselnik has a weird eye. No comedian is good looking. Every comedian has some flaw in their looks. Otherwise, they'd be doing some other shit. You know, like, as soon as they, even Dane Cook, like, something is weird.
There's gonna be some vulnerability, especially if you're doing more harsher context and stuff. There has to be some, you know, even like. You have to expose something to get away with it. I have to destroy my ego in front of an audience to be able to get away with the shit that I want to do at the end of the show. So I have to do, I have to have myself violated on so many levels verbally. And then I can allow them to do my big neck fucking joke at the end of the show.
I mean, do you find it is? You know where I just played, actually? The cool thing is, I've kept doing bands and I've really never stopped doing stuff and I've kept writing.
I dig it.
Doing stuff. And now it's sad, but like just independently, I played Hamilton the other day and I, you know, there was like 40, 50 people out specifically to see me, you know, and then.
Comedy.
Yeah, and comedy and Waterloo, the same thing, you know. So it's really slow, but it's like I do think that I... And then I'm having people... This is the best part, you know. Also kind of annoying, but like I'm having people being like, man, like that shit from like 10 years ago you were doing... It was still so funny to me. You know, they're like, wow, that was so good.
They paid attention to you. Isn't that nice?
It's nice. It's a little bit, you know, Danko just made kind of like a nod because it's like, that's like a bit the worst thing to hear too is like you're in the now and someone's like,
someone's like,
man, that stuff, the way you were before.
Remember
the
when
way
you had your shit before. Together?
Yeah.
Remember when you weren't in this downward spiral?
What it always
and
is.
I'll take a double-double there, Tommy
yeah,
Tim
right. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I don't know.
I think with the economy and the kind of politics in the world right now, there's a lot of power struggles between what people are willing to accept and what they're not right now.
But I'll take the American nerd thing over Canada's no thing.
At
any time. Right now, if you kind of go up, you know, everybody, it's like, it's kind of like the Mild West out here, you know? Like, it's like, you can kind of go, oh, I know what I'll do. I'm here in Canada. I'll just do something where I'll be like, the Glasses Man tour, you know? Like, I'm Nick, I'm the Glasses Man, or I'm, you know, like you can just sort of say you're doing some sort of, you are this particular niche, and no one's going to stop you in Canada because, like, there's no real competition. There's no drive.
No one gives a fuck.
Nobody gives a hell. Damn.
I remember when Cullen was on the podcast and both
and
of you were talking.
More importantly, no one gives a fuck what Nick's talking about in general. in and out of the podcast.
Nobody gives a
I've
fuck.
I've seen people spit on him on public transit. You ruined my anniversary last night at your fucking show.
Right.
Do you have to write cunt in all your notebooks?
Just
and I'll have another double-double, please.
Right. If I worked at a coffee shop,
Tim Hortons.
If I did, I would be a lot more scalded than I am now. I already have a lot of
liquor. You got Parkinson's, though, so you're not really a big coffee pourer.
It is genetic in my family. So,
how are you going to snowball that into a career with the shaky hand and shit? Are you going to take the microphone in your head and just lay on the stage?
I'll just shake a lot of people's hands.
You got your forearm clamped into a vise and people are just walking up and holding it and walking away. Yeah, we were at your show last night, and I hurt my shoulder shaking your hand there, old Shaky McGee.
Well, I mean, the last time you were on the podcast, we were talking about why haven't you put out an album, and now you are.
So I am.
A year later, it's about the eve of your album's release.
It's very exciting. I recorded it like 3 or 4 times, and even this recording, because we had originally recorded it in Toronto. And I thought if I kind of do it the weekend following Halloween, I might get the kind of aftermath of kind of the horror, nerdy kind of weirdos that would might come to the Jason Rouse show as kind of a secondary hallway Halloween kind of thing. Mm. And it was fucking awful. I had got a sound engineer in. We recorded it. And it was terrible.
Where was it
again? At Yuck Yucks.
Oh, here.
So, in Toronto.
So you were trying November to get people 2nd. Who wanted to go to Yuck Yucks to celebrate, like, the Halloween that they didn't celebrate.
Completely opposite Yuck Yucks showed up. It was it was old white people, and they were, the beginning of the kind of Christmas party element. And it was fucking terrible, man. I was awful.
Yeah, because by November, we're already at everyone thinking it's Christmas.
It was awful. I gambled and I lost. And I spent about 6 to 8 months playing. I brought all my merchandise, had a banner. I'm like, this is going to be the Jason Rouse show. I'm going to get a good recording out of this. We're going to record the 2 shows. I can't even listen to they sent me the recordings, mm-hmm. the raw files. I couldn't listen to it.
I mean, don't you think to it?
No, it was so bad.
Do you not have someone in your life that kind of says, hey, Jason, this is awesome?
Yeah, but those are liars. And those are my friends who just do that to keep me from shooting myself. You need that voice.
It's weird. It's really hard to have that voice of honesty in your life because, first of all, unless they do exactly what you do, you can kind of discount their opinion sometimes. You know what I mean?
No, like, I understand that. But, someone that you're like, okay, I totally have high expectations. This guy. He's mm-hmm. really honest with me.
You know, when you're doing shows and stuff, and people come up and they're like, oh man, that was so great. And you're like, this is probably the worst show of the year.
Yeah.
But they've taken in something completely different. But you have a standard, and the Danko Jones brand is this. And we did this tonight, but I need to live up here to kind of keep my muse going in this whole thing. Right.
Not to stay local with my statements, but I feel like...
You're hammered, aren't you?
Because I'm drunk.
Your mouth smells like the LCBO.
I'm Brundlefly.
What's Brundlefly?
Is it a liqueur? Goldblum and
Fly. Whoa, yeah. Hey,
that's right.
The fucking nerds point themselves out, eh? Real deal nerd, mother. Why am I pointing at you and I'm talking in the microphone? You're flipping through. There must be a spell for to make this one go away.
I think I should start being like, you Philistine. It's not my fault you don't know how to read,
First
Jason.
First of all, what is Philistine?
Yeah, they were the Palestinians.
You know, so just run with that. Hamilton?
Yeah, I don't think you went to school in Hamilton. I think you...
That's a great name for a
heavy
metal band.
Hung around outside of schools in Hamilton. You know, I think that you like maybe... Anyway.
Philistine. That would look like, think corpse paint with like horn rim glasses.
Sure.
Could we turn it down a little bit? Everyone's yelling over us. 1, 2, 3.
This is how...
No one likes me!
I feel like you can't get an album recorded in Toronto. With like a comedy album recorded in Toronto with like an incredible response.
Well, I
do you
did
know
it.
What I mean? Like where did you record it?
First one. A Corey did my recording at the Hard Luck.
Oh, I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I was so fucked up. I went out the night before. And that was great.
People, I could have been your plant.
I was an hour an hour late for the show, and it was packed, and it was great. But I dropped the. I was very unprofessional.
I see.
So then I re-recorded it a year later. On the Saturday at the Toronto Club, it was awful. So I last minute, my buddy's a guitar tech for metal band? Fuck. Anyway,
Canadian metal band?
Yeah, yeah. I want to say not in for
Annihilator.
Annihilator.
I don't know how I pulled that out.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah, and he's been a cool Dave Sheldon is his name. Okay. I reached out to him. I knew he was very tech savvy, mm-hmm. and I said, "Listen, man," because I did the show in Ajax on the Thursday, and it was great. I said, "Listen, I'm sorry, was it Thursday? Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, Thursday." So I said, "Look, it, man, can you come out Saturday and record both shows? I don't know what's going to happen, but and I just expected him to do it with my Zoom. He set up the mics in the room, and we got a great recording, and the show was great. We got both shows. So oddly enough, I think it comes down to like, my comedy works better around working class, you know, blue collar type people." Or
that's rock, not a bad thing.
Rock, yeah, and it's cool. I think there's more longevity in that. They're more dedicated to what they're into, and there's a future in that, opposed to a fad where it's fleeting. But so I got it. I got the recording. We're just doing the edits now, and the artwork's done. Everything's getting.
You've listened to this.
I have. I've listened to it numerous
is it
times.
One show.
I'm cutting two shows together.
Yeah, that was what I did with there my was record chunks as of well.
Chunks I couldn't get the front to back because there was a lot of second guessing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the audience wasn't they didn't know who the fuck at one point even during the recording I'm like you people have no idea why you're here like you haven't done any research I can see it on their faces I wonder if it's is this gonna be like what we saw on television not at all mm-hmm. but it worked they were into it. And the alcohol, I think, especially on the second show, allowed me to be lean into it a lot heavier than I normally would to get some really cool organic craziness.
Yeah, I think if I do another record, I'm gonna like have maybe two drinks before the show.
Yeah,
you know, and something because
loosen up
a little bit because I think that one of the biggest killers, of course, of recording anything is just the knowledge live. Is the knowledge that you're recording.
And well, I haven't seen...
Yeah, it
you fight yourself on stage, so I haven't seen you in a while, but I always see you have this kind of struggle of, like, I shouldn't be here, but I'm going to be here. You know, you can see the subtext underneath all your jokes. Like, oh, fuck, okay.
The best note I ever got from somebody was completely insane.
Face the audience?
No one's ever heard of that. But pretty much, actually, pretty very close to that. He said,
Pants?
No. The no pants thing has only been a boon to my career. He said,
when you used to put your glasses on your cock and do Groucho Marx impressions?
Oh, that was just for you.
Or the spitting Pinocchio?
That was the original. That was before podcasts.
I stopped wearing open-toed shoes around you because of that. He's got a lengthy, stringy load. You need to drink some water and do some yoga, buddy. It was coming out like that silly string. I got a horrible some sort of chemical burn on the inside of my toe from your cum shot, but that was you didn't do a lot of corporates that year, but
I liked corporates. Yeah, I ran for I got to fuck some juggalos.
I might do that festival next year.
Gather. Oh, are you serious? Sure.
Yeah.
You're like two steps removed from being a juggalo.
It's terrible. Who, me?
Yeah.
Now, that's probably one of the meanest things anyone's ever said to me.
I gave you two steps, man.
I can't Those stand that.
I get it. I might do this festival. I can't stand
it. I can't stand it. I like being at a party I'm not invited to.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it'll be fine. They love that kind of... It's like a NASCAR with clown makeup.
Yeah, I think it might have been it's like super actually like not fun, like not like loose feeling. It feels like a bunch of people who like really are just not sure what to do for fucking sports.
Yes, so maybe just, like 5-6 years ago, but ever since that movie, since they got spoofed on SNL.
Now it's the nerds and the hipsters are showing up.
I think it's
actually
kind of funny that you would do it. I mean, I think it would be something that you would actually...
No, do it, man. They'll pellet you with shit like Tila Tequila.
It's gotten more of a profile than it did 5-6 years ago. It's actually something worth doing.
Definitely. And I think that they probably pay people too.
That's so, part of their. I'd say 90% of it is money. Yeah. And but I think my brand of humor is kind of in that genre indirectly, I guess. As far as I know, their lyrics are quite crass and over the top.
They became born again Christians or something at some
point. But that was because they had. Such
I think
a
they
bad
always were Christians,
persona,
and.
It's always funny to hide behind Jesus.
Juggalos. Didn't some juggalos do some crazy shit in the name of ICP, and so they had to kind of
I don't know what it is. They had, I mean, if you take it way back, it goes to when DreamWorks Records was like first starting, and they signed.
Is that when Warner Brothers signed Mr. Bungle?
It was probably after that. It was probably like, it was more like maybe 98. They had this record called The Great Milenko. And it was like, they got in trouble because they were viewed as like these satanic clowns with violent imagery. And it's like,
From Detroit.
And
overweight then, rodeo clowns.
Yeah, just like, there's no threat at all. And now they're, I don't know, but yeah.
We're really having to talk about
Juggalos. Oh, we can get deeper into Juggalos.
We can get really deep.
I watched that whole documentary as well.
I've seen it like twice, two, three times.
Family Gathering.
Yeah.
I love the music. Even if it's genres of music I don't dig, I always watch as many music documentaries, biographies, anything I can get my hands on.
But we watched it on tour, and then I kind of got it into it with our tour manager, who's kind of the same
ilk.
He doesn't
like
it, but then he listens to it all the time to the point where now he likes it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we were getting to that point where
I was listening to them. Yeah. I was like, for fun, I would listen to, because I was like so confused by their deal. There was a song called "What Is a Juggalo," and it would be like, "What is a juggalo? A dead body? Well, he's not really dead, but he's not like anybody that you ever seen before."
He dropped Monopoly some lyrics shit out here?
Connect Four.
Wow.
And I was like, I just...
You're making my pussy wet.
I know. That's your back pussy.
What music have you been listening to lately? Anything? I saw your CD at my brother's house.
Brutal Nights?
Yeah. My brother's a big fan of yours.
That's awesome. I'm trying to think. Well, we just played...
And I saw you guys open for The Retards.
Not the retards for Jay Retard. Yeah. That was a crazy show.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a good one. That wasn't like the one where he punched
a year ago or something. Yeah. That was one where he got in a fight.
No, you were at the one where he was making up for the fight, I think, because that was a Sneaky D's, right?
Yes.
So you came to that show, and that was the show that wouldn't really have happened if the other show hadn't been cut short. The one which we also played,
the Yamacombo one with Dan Burke,
Silver Dollar.
Yeah,
and Jay wound up. What did he do? He punched a kid or something?
Didn't he beat up
somebody? Attacked
the promoter?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
He punched a kid, I think, or he like stopped.
Isn't it on YouTube?
Go on YouTube and look up Jay Retard.
Whatever, and it's all blur.
Did he die of just natural causes?
I mean, I think no. He died of like bad drugs, I think.
Okay.
Like he took some drugs. They weren't good quality, and I guess it...
What, was he shooting heroin, or no, who dies from a drug overdose?
But I don't really know.
You need to get a better deal.
You know, I don't want... It was really... It was weird and sad, but, you know, it's so strange.
Well, now he's a legend.
It did kind of put him into some sort of a perspective that I think that there's kind of a thing sometimes when someone like him who's like... He was like a contentious, not contentious figure, but he wasn't like an easy guy with everybody. I think he was really engaged all the time, you know, which most of the time means that you're super aware of everything that people are saying to you, and you'll call them on anything. And so I think he was getting in conflicts with people sometimes, you know.
It's called autism, I think.
He probably had autism. And all of his songs are cool because they're all like, I hate you, you know, they're all really sort of negative And I think that's what like struck a chord with people. Basically,
he was great.
I think he's awesome too.
He's amazing.
My brother turned me in. I'm glad my brother. He's more punk element of music, where I'm more in the metal thing.
Right.
But we're always exchanging ideas and music back and forth. And he's like, "You got to see these guys." Blah blah blah. And then I think I went to see you actually, and then and then my brother said, "Well, these guys that are headlining are pretty impressive."
Yeah.
I enjoy the back and forth between you guys.
You like it when I pick on Nick because it makes you feel better about yourself because you're a prick too.
Well, yeah, it gives me some time off. Nick is aware of...
Have you ever seen him cry?
Nick?
Yeah.
No, but I got...
mean, like this week?
I got a... There was one time... This is years ago. We're going back 6, 7 years. I think you sent me an email and I sent you something, and then you sent me this very stern email putting me in my place, going, basically, fuck you.
Yeah, he's an emotional creature.
Yeah.
What Nick, was it? And were you like, I deserved that?
No, I was like, listen, guy, this is why I say this, and then I had to like break maybe. Face and fucking tell him, no, you're cool. I think you're good.
It was bullshit. But that's
it backed me up against the wall.
He's that character, though. He's like, Nick has a certain things that he's forgiving with, but other things he has to draw a line. Yeah. And then you got to do damage control with him.
Yeah,
he's
but everybody's like that, right?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean,
you seem like you'd be sensitive, Jason.
I cry in the shower.
Yeah, you probably cry in the shower.
No, I'm sensitive.
Cry in the golden shower.
People would argue that. My inner circle of friends think I'm a heartless prick, but
you know,
I abuse them for good reason.
I saw a comedian, by the way. Interesting to talk about. Put something up online. I think he's kind of a mutual friend of ours, definitely from our era. He wrote, "You guys keep your name out my mouth." He was like, "Here's some comedians who have to keep their names out of my mouth."
What is this, fucking grade 8? That's something you read on a bathroom wall in a high school.
Yeah,
trust me. And Facebook is all about high school.
That's a Dr. Dre line. Keep my name out of your mouth, I'll do the same. I think it's about him and Ice Cube. When they had their falling out.
No, I think it was Yella. I think it was like one of those other NWA, not Yella, like another NWA guy. But you put sort of this, because it was in 2001, right?
Jerry Heller?
No, no, no. I think it was like not even Yella, but like another fucking guy. No, it must have been Yella. I love saying Yella. Even though Yella makes it.
I think it's pronounced yellow, sir. not reading so much anymore, eh, Nicholas?
Is that what Hella is? Is it just hello?
I was Jerry instructed Heller is, by my manager. Other white friends that it's pronounced yellow.
It's kind of crazy, like 13 years into doing comedy now.
Fuck, it's like, went by fast, huh?
Didn't it? You know, and then
18 for me.
Yeah, it's crazy to start to cry.
If I could have read more, I could have done some other shit.
Yeah, no, if you'd read more, you could have become maybe like a
if
knight.
I was more readed, I would have been more learned than most of the folks in me family.
Yeah. You could have done the dream of every comedian, which is not being a comedian and just writing for some show that's only kind of funny. That's like the dream.
Is that really the dream?
No.
I mean, like, you know, making any amount of money is the dream, I think.
Yeah, I haven't had a day job in 16 years. I haven't.
That's good.
I have nothing.
Cool. You haven't had a home in 16 years.
Yeah, I've been all over the fucking joint.
Hey, here's all these Toronto beans. We love them. We love all of the Toronto events.
I like it when he slips in and out of nonsense. Oh,
big fiend of donkey jeans.
Tip your head back, Flanagan. You're drooling into the mic.
Jason Race, I bought you this gigolo map.
Hello, Governor. You put some chips in your cunt, mate.
Hello, Governor.
We can't have a podcast without one of Flanagan's signature impressions.
Yeah. Oh, hey, magic. Yeah. I think it's so bang on. I really think I'm at the waiting line at the food bank.
He is the president of Australia.
You've also taken to Twitter
I'd
with,
like
with
to
your
personally invite you to perform at the Soundwave Festival, Dyson Rice.
Is that Australian?
Yes, it is.
Is that like
it's
an
a
Australian
Kiwi.
Who
it's
was like
New Zealand?
I'm a Kiwi.
He's just doing the same fucking voice. Let's hear your Irishman. Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, the boys are back in town. Did you hear?
This is terrible. This is terrible. You're the worst dialect coach I've ever had.
Oh, I'm just a cowboy.
Yeah, all of his impressions.
Oh, so lonesome.
He giggles through them.
I giggle through everything.
He's playing
sex,
a joke on himself.
Death. What else? What should I do?
Your Japanese one.
Japanese would be like.
Which is also your German one.
Hello, Mr. Hello, Mr. McLean. Can you rescue us?
That's Japanese?
Yes, he's very.
Sean Connery ass.
Just like.
Did you get a back scratcher to maybe we push that chinchilla down the collar of his shirt? What is that?
It's a lot of hair.
Jesus Christ.
It's a lot of hair, man. So wait, I want to get back to this thing. You were talking about the nerds last year, too. We were also having a conversation about the nerd thing. Would you say
fake nerds?
It's only ramped up since then?
Yeah, I think it's become trendy. You're getting a lot of... I think the industry is kind of focusing on the thing, but I think it's dissipating. I'm waiting for the resurgence of this Kinison Dice.
Jim Norton's.
Yeah.
Well, isn't there a resurgence with Dice himself?
Yeah.
Dice, I mean, Dice is doing well.
He did a special a year ago, actually. It aired on New Year's last year. Silverstein.
And he's
Andrew Silverstein. Is
I feel like I would probably.
You look a bit like his son,
Max.
Yeah. And he does stand up.
I've emailed. I've emailed back and forth with him. I tried to get Max to do stand up for our LA show a few years back.
Get Max to do that.
LA Rocks is his son's band.
LA Rocks. It's both his sons.
Yeah.
One's on drums. I think Max is on drums, and his younger son's on guitars and vocals.
I feel like they opened his special.
Wow.
They had his son's band play it, like Eddie Murphy's
style. How good is No Apologies, by the way? Have you the special No Apologies that he did? The one where it's so good.
The Day the Laughter Died?
Oh, well, that's just another level of stuff.
One and two.
Both of the Days the Laughter Died.
That would have, was my
all the days.
My point of reference for the album that I'm putting out is there's a lot of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Sabotaging.
I have that on my record.
Then why don't you do? Then why don't you put out the Toronto Yuck Yucks one in tribute to the Day the Laughter Died?
Because there was a fine line. There was frustration in it. It wasn't me being in control of the uncomfortableness. It was just like it was like showing up at the wrong. It was like I came to somebody's wedding and took a piss all over the cake and then wanted to go around and shake everyone's hand.
That's awesome. That sounds awesome.
It sounds awesome for you. But it's my first impression of the business.
I mean, a lot of reviews of my record. When it came out, we're like, it sounds like bombing, but it isn't. You know
what I mean? Like, is that the title of it?
That's a great title.
It's called It Sounds Like Bombing,
But It Isn't.
That's great.
Dot, dot, dot.
I mean, I think that there was a little bit, and it's still a thing where of like presenting myself.
I didn't know you did stand up.
No, I don't, actually. I do more of a spoken word.
Face the audience!
Kind of like, I do kind of, I like to think of it as sort of surgery for the soul done with my voice.
It's like, I saw a woman walk out of Nick's show once saying that she'd rather watch her own children drown than see that again. And it was Nick's mother.
Yeah.
Who is a dog?
Greyhound.
She's the greyhound. Oh, you got one of those shoehorns.
Are we recording yet?
Yeah, we are.
Oh, we're in it. Oh, okay. Here we are. We're back for Jason Russ's Christian Radio. Here with
Welcome
Jones.
To Jason in the Morning.
Yeah,
we should do a morning team.
That'd be great. Called Black Coffee, Go Fuck Yourself.